respuesta por más de 26.000 desapariciones forzadas ocurridas entre 2006 y 2012. El informe de la Organización Defensora de los Derechos Humanos señaló que la mayoría de estos casos están en manos de las fuerzas de seguridad del Estado y en colaboración directa en organizaciones delictivas. Argumentos que dejan en evidencia los pocos avances obtenidos por el presidente Enrique Peña Nieto desde que promulgó la Ley Integral de los Supuestos de Asegurar los Derechos de las Víctimas. México también ha reportado tres casos de desapariciones emblemáticas con antecedentes del año 2011, cuando fueron encontrados más de 200 cuerpos sin vidas en decenas de fosas clandestinas en las adyacencias de San Fernando, Tamaulipas. Otro de los casos ocurrió el 26 de mayo del año pasado, donde 13 jóvenes fueron secuestrados en un bar de la zona Rosa, en Ciudad de México. Tres meses después, el 21 de agosto, aparece una fosa clandestina en el Estado de México. Y no es sino hasta el 25 del mismo mes que se confirma la identidad de las víctimas.
La pesadilla que viven las y los mexicanos hoy día es un tema central del libro Estado de Emergencia del escritor Carlos Facio. Él habla de una campaña de exterminio diseñada para aplicarse a las y los mexicanos que resisten la embestida neoliberal promovida por Washington en el hemisferio occidental.
Estado de Emergencia es el último libro de una trilogía que aparece en 1997 con el tercer vínculo, que tenía un subtítulo de la teoría del caos a la militarización de México. Estamos hablando de 97. El segundo libro de esta trilogía es Terrorismo Mediático, que tiene que ver con la construcción social del miedo en México, y ahí abordamos justamente todo el periodo de el terrorismo a través de Televisa y los grandes medios, fusión masiva en México, contra López Obrador, pero también contra la sociedad en su conjunto, y culmina con este estado de emergencia, que tiene que ver con aquella vieja frase de Walter Benjamin, un judío alemán en 1943, que estuvo en un campo de concentración nazi, que hablaba que para los oprimidos de Europa, él hablaba de la Europa de comienzos del siglo XX, el estado de excepción o el estado de emergencia no era la excepción sino la regla, ¿no? Entonces, de alguna manera, lo que nosotros estamos planteando a través de la guerra de Calderón, la falsa guerra, la droga de Calderón, hasta este 2016 con Peña Nieto, es que hay una suerte de facto, de vigencia de un estado de emergencia sin declarar, en donde máquinas de guerra, que tiene que ver con el ejército, tiene que ver con la marina, tiene que ver con las distintas policías militarizadas, pero en cohabitación con los grupos de la economía criminal, con esto que en México se denomina cártel de las drogas, están llevando a cabo una guerra de exterminio contra el pueblo. Es decir, es una guerra de exterminio que se da en el marco de un sistema capitalista que hemos definido como un capitalismo criminal, un capitalismo criminalizado, y donde hoy en México, en estos últimos 10 años, de alguna manera se replica lo que de 2002 a 2010 llevó a cabo en Colombia, por ejemplo, Álvaro Uribe, es decir, una guerra de exterminio con eje en la supuesta guerra a las drogas, donde por abajo esta violencia de Estado, en colusión con los grupos criminales, se estaba llevando a cabo la reconfiguración de todo el territorio nacional. Es decir, cuando en 2010-2011 terminó la supuesta guerra a las drogas en Colombia y se hicieron algunas nuevas leyes y leyes de reparación, la minería, las grandes corporaciones mineras ya se habían apropiado más del 44% del subsuelo de Colombia. Eso mismo es lo que está en el fondo de esta falsa guerra a las drogas en México con Calderón, con Peña Nieto. Lo que se está llevando a cabo es una nueva fase de acumulación capitalista por despojo o por desposesión, lo que remite al capítulo 24, el Capital, con Marx, cuando habla que la acumulación primitiva, la acumulación originaria del capitalismo, se da en base a la violencia, a base al robo, al hurto, a las invasiones, etcétera, ¿no? Entonces, lo que manejamos en el libro es también el concepto de la guerra de espectro completo, que es una guerra que no solo tiene que ver con lo militar, sino también con lo económico, lo financiero, lo cultural, la educación, lo jurídico. Lo estamos viendo hoy en América Latina, no solo en México, sino en el caso de Venezuela. Ahí se está justamente ejemplificando la parte más mediática de esta guerra, pero que es una guerra que hace de la economía un arma, igual que se aplicó en Chile en 1973 como contra el presidente Salvador Allende. Hoy esa política se está aplicando hace varios años en Venezuela, una guerra económica que a su vez se complementa con una guerra mediática, es decir, una guerra a través de las grandes corporaciones, sobre todo las televisoras, las radios bajo control monopólico privado. Pero bueno, ese mismo esquema, ese que funciona contra Dilma hoy en Brasil, en donde justamente se da esto que se conoce como los golpes suaves, en donde, digamos, se articula el poder judicial con la policía, con un grupo de legisladores corruptos, para echar abajo a una presidenta en base a una falsa acusación, es decir, algo por la que no se la puede criminalizar, sin embargo la logran sacar del Estado. Entonces, toda esta guerra forma parte de la doctrina del Pentágono, del ejército de Estados Unidos. Forma parte, digamos, de una guerra de espectro completo que tiene es parte consustancial de la doctrina de guerra de Estados Unidos, y como vemos necesita de agentes locales, necesita estas máquinas de guerras que están constituidas, como dice Membé, máquinas de guerra que integran los organismos de seguridad del Estado en cohabitación con grupos criminales. El caso concreto más claro de esto es lo que ocurrió en Michoacán, en México, donde hay la colusión del gobernador Vallejo con todo el aparato de gobierno de su administración, pero con los caballeros templarios, es decir, su segundo reina, el del PRI, los dos, está preso en un penal de máxima seguridad porque se comprueban los nexos con la Tuta, ¿no?, el que era el supuesto jefe de este grupo criminal. Pero esto es parte de una realidad que pasa por la clase política, pero que también tiene que ver con la Policía Federal, con la Marina de Guerra, porque por dónde salía, en todo caso, la exportación de aguacate, del limón, del hierro, que según la narrativa oficial nos dicen que la exportaban ilegalmente los caballeros templarios. Salía por un puerto que, por razones de seguridad nacional, está bajo el control de la Marina de Guerra, un puerto, Lázaro Cárdenas, que es el segundo en importancia después de Long Beach, en California, como puerto de contenedores para el corazón del capitalismo mundial que hoy está en el Asia-Pacífico, ¿no? Es decir, tiene que ver con China, con Indonesia, con Japón, con la India, ahí, y lo que es California al lado estadounidense, ahí está el eje del comercio capitalista mundial, ¿no? Entonces, bueno, de todo esto habla este libro que presentamos, y tiene que ver con que en toda América Latina, o en el mundo, pensemos en Libia, pensemos en Ucrania, pensemos en Siria, en Afganistán, en Irak, antes, este capitalismo militarizado, lo que está llevando a cabo es una guerra por territorios donde hay recursos, como el petróleo, como el gas natural, como el agua, como la biodiversidad, los distintos minerales, territorios donde hay también población, y esa población justamente está siendo instrumentalizada mediante esta política violenta, está siendo refuncionalizada, rompiéndose los tejidos sociales en una nueva fase en esta acumulación capitalista, no solo como consumidoras, sino también como mano de obra barata. Mano de obra barata que puede ser desechable, es considerada superflua por el gran capital, pero puede ser también matable, como dice Agamben, tomando el ejemplo de Colombia, ¿no? Es decir, pensemos en los 6 muertos de la noche del 26 de septiembre en Iguala, 6 muertos, 3 de ellos estudiantes, 3 muertos a quemarropa, uno de esos desollado. Pero la misma noche que a su vez se comete otro crimen, que es la detención, desaparición de 43 estudiantes. Entonces, aquí estamos hablando de una necropolítica, que Aquiles Membé, que es un camerunés, que es quien acuña esta categoría, plantea como la administración el trabajo de muerte, para destruir poblaciones enteras, para apropiarse el territorio. Pone el ejemplo de la colonia, de la plantación, y ejemplifica él con el caso de los territorios árabes ocupados por Israel en este momento. Una réplica de lo que era el apartheid en Sudáfrica, ¿no?
Era el escritor Carlos Facio hablando ante el micrófono de Norma Martínez. La segunda parte de la entrevista podrá ser escuchada el jueves en este programa, o si lo prefieres, puedes obtenerla en Facebook Informativo Pacífica o en nuestro blog pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com. Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toxtli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop Spears Broadside, the first live edition since September, I think. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to a broadcast live edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and you're tuned to 101.3 FM, or perhaps freakradio.org. But for the first time in, I don't know how many months, 9 months more or less, we are back not only live and broadcasting on the internet and over the airwaves, but also in the studio. So there is a phone line that you can call in if you wish, and the phone line is 831-427-3772. Again, that's 831-427-3772, Or for those who don't like the numbers, it's 427-FRSC, because we are indeed Free Radio Santa Cruz. So welcome to the show. I'll be with you for 2 hours, considering a number of things, including an upcoming court hearing that I'm going to be at tomorrow as the defendant. A Freedom Sleep ticket or two hit me last year, and I'm now defending against those citations, not in a trial yet. That comes up, well, it's slated for a week from Friday, but it's probably going to be delayed, or at least I hope it will be. But what this is a motions hearing, a hearing to hear the motion that Kate Wells is making. Actually, I'm making it, and she's arguing it, for the audio and the video that the police department took when it was harassing, citing, arresting, and driving away people from their legitimate positions at City Hall as peaceful protesters of the city's infamous and 35-year-old, I don't know how old it is now, since 1978, sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night outside in Santa Cruz and also inside many structures. It's mainly just to prevent what they charitably call illegal camping, but it's actually designed to eliminate the poor, the homeless, those outside, those passing through, and to reassure the folks who are up with the gentrification agenda that they can use the police to drive away people they don't like the looks of, who are poor at night, who may be, let's say, sleeping in their vehicles because they have no other place to be. And indeed, the RV situation has actually been explicitly criminalized at night, not just for sleeping, but for parking. If you park at night in Santa Cruz, if this new law goes into force, and it was passed last fall, but it's been delayed because of a complaint or a concern to the Coastal Commission that the attempt to criminalize all people who don't have permits, who park their RVs anywhere in Santa Cruz at night, are guilty of a crime, that denies access to the coast for those who don't have the luxury of renting or owning in Santa Cruz or having gone down to buy a permit from the friendly authorities at City Hall. So I'm the one who actually wrote that letter, so good for me. And I didn't even realize it had the impact it did until a council member advised me that it was this letter that apparently has delayed the RV ordinance for 9 months now. I think it was November or December that this law was passed. Might have been October, thanks to our bigotry coddling and perhaps bigotry motivated council member, Rochelle Narayan. And she was previously head of the Transportation and Public Works Commission, which I guess she, I don't know if it's fair to say she pushed this through that commission, but she was the chair. She supported it. She supported it in the city council. She argued for it. She was a big arguer for it at the last, I don't know if it was this last Tuesday's city council meeting. I think it was the one before, on May 24th, when there was a peanut gallery of not in my backyard. I think they're West Side neighbors, but they could have been from different parts of the city, too, who wanted to ignore the Coastal Commission concerns and press on ahead. And in fact, what the staff has done on this issue is they have issued the city their own permit to proceed. I think they've limited the hours from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. to a little bit shorter period of time. I'm not really as up on this as I might be, and hopefully on Sunday I will be more so. I intend to write a second letter to the Coastal Commission on behalf of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I work with, because not only does this ordinance affect tourists and people who don't happen to rent or live here but like to get park their RVs near the coast, it affects particularly homeless people who live in their RVs. And there are not that many of them in terms of the total homeless population, but people who sleep or live in their vehicles is a growing situation. Sometimes vehicles are RVs and sometimes they're cars. And it's a situation that is Well, as I always say, as a sort of a bumper sticker slogan, that's true. It's a cliche, but it's also a truism and a true truism. The affordable housing for Santa Cruz is a vehicle for a lot of people. Or you move out, or you know, you struggle to move in with three or four people and compete with 50 others to get a space. It's a gruesome situation, particularly coming up in the months ahead when students will be vying for that housing as well. So I want to remind you that you can call in to Free Radio Santa Cruz with updates, 427-3772. You can call in with opposing opinions or questions. So feel free to do that. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. And I did mention I'm going to court tomorrow, and I'm going to plug that initially because I think it's something that might interest some of the regular listeners and maybe some of you folks who are just tuning in. Because of the city's sleeping ban, there has been a continuous struggle, at least by some of us over the last few decades, to end this really blatant violation of human rights for poor people in Santa Cruz. It's not that poor people should be given this or given that, but they must be allowed to sleep legally. Not necessarily anywhere and everywhere, although there is an argument for that too, if they're not bothering other people or violating other laws. But at least somewhere, or a number of somewheres. And that has been studiously ignored and also rejected by the Santa Cruz City Council and the financial forces and the neighborhood organizations and the downtown association that backs certain members of the City Council and exerts significant, if not overweening, pressure on all of them. So, I'm going to try to keep my eye. We do have a caller. Now let's see if I can figure out how to get this caller on the air. Hang on here. Let's see how we do this. Let's see. Are you on the air? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Robert. Can you hear me?
I can. Congratulations. We're talking to an engineer and programmer who, along with a couple of others, is largely responsible for creating this studio. I mean, all of us helped, but a particular hats off to you, Uncle Dennis.
Robert, I just wanted to make sure that the phone circuits were working for you, and welcome back to the studio.
Thanks, and thank you for making it a studio to be welcomed back into. And I guess we'll be hearing your show at 8 o'clock.
That's correct. From the cream to the dregs, we'll resume on Free Radio at 8 p.m. tonight.
Along
with... Of course, tune in at 9 o'clock for the Earth First Update.
I was going to ask. Thank you, Dennis, and we'll see you when you show up.
All right, Robert. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So the radio station's phone line is working, so you can call in if you have any thoughts on anything that is being discussed, 427-3772. Again, the hearing tomorrow at 10 o'clock in Department 1 will be, actually, the event will start a little earlier. I think Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs and some other Food Not Bombskers will be showing up earlier, like 9 or 9:30, in front of the county courthouse with, I don't think they're going to have a full-fledged meal, but maybe some snacks and some literature, and there may be a speak out there if enough people will show up and want to do some speaking out. I believe attorney Kate Wells will be showing up earlier. Her name, I've always added the word catnip to the front of her name, Catnip Kate. She and I have had many disagreements over the years, but she's also been a frequent supporter, much in spite of her own financial needs, of homeless struggles and of civil rights struggles in Santa Cruz. She's largely involved in federal lawsuits where she's won money for people she's won acknowledgement of the rights of individuals who've been wronged by groups like the police department. And I'm going to try to keep an eye on the flasher here. I don't have a ringer. I don't think we have a ringer. If we do, I don't know where it is yet. This is my first night in the new studio, so I have to ask listeners to be patient with me and me to be patient with myself, which is a trial in itself on occasion. So I'm going to first try to reach Catnip Kate to talk about this case that is coming up. Again, Well, maybe let's give a brief description. I've already put out a description on the Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is a website which I regularly write on, in case you want to check it out. It's indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you browse for it, you can find it. And it is, the issue is, for those of us who were ticketed for being at City Hall, and not, we're not talking about inside the buildings, but just on the premises, in what you would think would be the right to be at the center of government, even though it's late at night. We were holding up picket signs, or some of us were in our sleeping bags, peacefully sleeping with signs, end the sleeping ban, stop the crime of harassing people for slumber, show some respect for poor people, homeless people, unhoused people are shouldn't be regarded as second-class citizens, that sort of thing, although they were, it was better put than I'm putting it now. And we were cited under an ordinance, Municipal Code 13.04.011, which is a law that prohibits you to be in areas that the head of the Parks and Rec Department, who at the time was Danette Shoemaker, has decided should be closed during certain hours. And that park area was closed. It's not really a park. I mean, it's the center of City Hall, but there was some grass there until they tore it all out in the last few months, probably to discourage homeless people from using that area during the day. There's been this incredibly persistent, low-key, increasingly higher-key war against homeless folks in Santa Cruz. And it's gone on, and I've talked about it in my, well, twice a week for the last 25 years, and we'll continue to be talking about it probably as long as I do these shows. Anyway, those of us who did sleep there were told to move or else just given tickets. And those of us who just stood there with a sign were also told we couldn't be at the center of government holding up a sign outdoors, as is permitted in every other city that I know of, but not in Santa Cruz since 2010, when this regulation was created. It isn't even a law. It's an administrative edict that was done in private by the police chief, the city manager, the head of the Department of Parks and Rec, and the mayor, I think, at the time, Mike Rotkin, that declared this whole area of City Hall that had traditionally been an area that's open to the public 24 hours a day, you know, if you're not engaging in window breaking or urinating and defecating, although it would be nice if they had some 24-hour bathrooms, yes, it would, then you can walk through there, you can be in there, you can hang out there. Not a lot of people did, because it's been patrolled by First Alarm security guards. Actually, that kind of was a more recent development in the last two or three years. So, anyway, it was in order to end a homeless protest called Peace Camp 2010 that was happening way back then, led by Gary Johnson, Kerbugger Chris, and Ed Fry was involved, the attorney Ed Fry. He was himself actually convicted of the crime of lodging, which is their fancy way of saying he was sleeping with the homeless folks in solidarity. One of the things they're claiming is that I and these two citations that are coming to court tomorrow are that I was, I was there in the area after 10 o'clock. And I was in the area after 10 o'clock. But I'm claiming that you have a right to be in that area, that the entire restriction is an unconstitutional abridgment, an unreasonable abridgment of the right of petition and assembly. Yeah, especially because it's at the center of government. There's no reasonable basis for not refusing people to be there. The second thing I'm claiming is that part of the ordinance that does restrict all this says that if there is a clearly designated pathway through the area, that being on that pathway shall be an exemption to this law. And I was on the pathway when I was told to leave. And so I said, no, I'm going to stay here. I'm on the pathway. So they cited me anyway, and on one occasion they arrested me. That particular thing is not coming up. There are two citations I'm coming in the arrest, strangely enough, where I was taken to jail with Kevin Rothwell, who also was arrested with me, was strangely dropped completely, even though it was exactly the same so-called crime of being in the area after 10 o'clock. And the third issue, and really the one which we are hoping to win on in court, is the issue of the agendas. City Council posts its agendas in a glass case right outside the City Hall chambers, and that is within this forbidden zone. You're not allowed to be in after 10 o'clock. And yet, the state law, the Brown Act, also known as the Public Meetings Act, requires that all government agencies allow this, its citizenry access to the agenda, the hard copy agenda, not just an online agenda, 24 hours a day for a 72-hour period before each meeting. And on all three occasions when I was arrested, and I would say on every occasion when anyone else was cited or arrested at City Hall for violating this ordinance because they were inside the so-called forbidden zone, they were also there during the 72-hour period where they should have been left unmolested to look at the agendas if they wanted to be in that area with access to those agendas. Police paid no attention to this and proceeded to drive us away, harass us, cite us, even arrest us. And the purpose of this hearing, it's not a trial yet on the issue when these actual arguments will be brought up in a very specific way. It is an attempt to get the police video that shows them stating that we have to leave, that shows where I was standing on the path, that shows that I made the arguments to them, look, I want to go see the agendas, I feel I have a right to be here because of that, and it shows that they did not allow that to happen. And it's much more persuasive to have police department documentation that you are doing what you say you're doing than for you to testify it yourself. And so I've been requesting the video that police took, and they were taking video. Photographer Alex DeRosi, who you can find on the same indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or on his own website, who is an excellent photographer and reporter, and he has been regularly documenting the Freedom Sleepers movement. He has numerous photos that I'm presenting tomorrow at 10 o'clock in Department 1 at the court to show Judge Paul Miragonda of Department 1 to state police are, if they haven't found the video, let them look a little harder because it's obvious they took it because you can see them taking it with these photos that Alex DeRosi was good enough to download for me and make available. And so that's going to be happening tomorrow at 10. And what I want to do now is talk to Attorney Kate Wells a bit about this issue and its implications. I may or may not be able to reach her because she's got some other conflicts. She's got some other things she's doing. She may not even be home. But she told me to try giving her a call anyway. And I'm going to try doing that now and seeing if I can get through to her. Let's see how we're doing here. And we are we're ringing her. We'll see if we can catch up with her. But she may not be home yet, and she also may be busy. But she will be at the court tomorrow, and she's going to come a little early to talk about the case in front of the courthouse, she's told me. And hopefully
a call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system.
We'll leave her a message here.
Kate
is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you finish recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Indeed.
To send a fax, press 4 now. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey, Kate, this is Robert at Free Radio, 427-3772. If you have 5 or 10 minutes, give me a call, and we'll pick this up on the air, assuming I can remember to take a look at the flashing light. We don't have a beeper buzzer here as we used to, or a ringer. 427-3772. Thanks. So we will proceed instead with some other stuff. And what I'm going to do is do some interviews, play for you some interviews that I've done in the last 4 or 5 days, a lot of them actually. Let's begin at New Leaf. I don't actually not. It's not New Leaf. It's I'm not quite sure what this one is. Let's just go into it blind and see what we find. Looking for it, but I'm still not sure where to. Oh dear, may have be having some problems here. I'm going to do something else while I try to puzzle out this board, the audio board that I'm just beginning to work with here. Let's hear something from The Grapes of Wrath. I've been listening to the rather lengthy audio of The Grapes of Wrath, which you can get in the public library, and some of it is really moving, and I found this particular part particularly moving. I'm going to play it for you.
Chapter 21. The moving, questing people were migrants now. Those families which had lived on a little piece of land, who had lived and died on 40 acres, had eaten or starved on the produce of 40 acres, had now the whole West to rove in. And they scampered about, looking for work. And the highways were streams of people, and the ditch banks were lines of people. Behind them more were coming. The great highways streamed with moving people. There in the middle and southwest had lived a simple agrarian folk who had not changed with industry, who had not formed with machines or known the power and danger of machines in private hands. They had not grown up in the paradoxes of industry. Their senses were still sharp to the ridiculousness of the industrial life. And then, suddenly, the machines pushed them out, and they swarmed on the highways. The movement changed them, the highways, the camps along the road. The fear of hunger and the hunger itself changed them. The children without dinner changed them. The endless moving changed them. They were migrants, and the hostility changed them, welded them, united them. Hostility that made the little towns group and arm as though to repel an invader. Squads with pick handles, clerks and storekeepers with shotguns, guarding the world against their own people. In the West, there was panic when the migrants multiplied on the highways. Men of property were terrified for their property. Men who had never been hungry saw the eyes of the hungry. Men who had never wanted anything very much saw the flare of want in the eyes of the migrants. And the men of the towns and of the soft suburban country gathered to defend themselves, and they reassured themselves that they were good and the invaders bad, as a man must do before he fights. They said, "These goddamn Okies are dirty and ignorant. They're degenerate, sexual maniacs. These goddamn Okies are thieves. They'll steal anything. They've got no sense of property rights." And the latter was true, for how can a man without property know the ache of ownership? And the defending people said, "They bring disease. They're filthy. We can't have them in the schools. They're strangers. How'd you like to have your sister go out with one of them?" The local people whipped themselves into a mold of cruelty. Then they formed units, squads, and armed them. Armed them with clubs, with gas, with guns. "We own the country. We can't let these Okies get out of hand." And the men who were armed did not own the land, but they thought they did. And the clerks who drilled at night owned nothing. And the little storekeepers possessed only a drawer full of debts. But even a debt is something. Even a job is something. The clerk thought, "I get $15 a week. Suppose a goddamn Okie would work for 12. And the little storekeeper thought, "How could I compete with a debtless man?" And the migrants streamed in on the highways, and their hunger was in their eyes, and their need was in their eyes. They had no argument, no system, nothing but their numbers and their needs. When there was work for a man, 10 men fought for it, fought with a low wage. If that fellow worked for 30 cents, I'll work for 25. If he'll take 25, I'll do it for 20. No, me. I'm hungry. I'll work for 15. I'll work for food. The kids. You ought to see them. Little boils like coming out, and they can't run around. Give them some windfall fruit, and they bloat it up. Me, I'll work for a little piece of meat. And this was good, for wages went down, and prices stayed up. The great owners were glad, and they sent out more handbills to bring more people in. And wages went down, and prices stayed up. And pretty soon now we'll have serfs again. And now the great owners and the companies invented a new method. A great owner bought a cannery, and when the peaches and the pears were ripe, he cut the price of fruit below the cost of raising it. And as cannery owner, he paid himself a low price for the fruit and kept the price of canned goods up and took his profit. And the little farmers who owned no canneries lost their farms, and they were taken by the great owners, the banks, and the companies who also owned the canneries. As time went on, there were fewer farms. The little farmers moved into town for a while and exhausted their credit, exhausted their friends, their relatives, and then they too went on the highways, and the roads were crowded with men ravenous for work, murderous for work. And the companies, the banks, worked at their own doom and did not know it. The fields were fruitful, and starving men moved on the roads. The granaries were full, and the children of the poor grew up rachitic, and the pustules of pellagra swelled on their sides. The great companies did not know that the line between hunger and anger is a thin line. And money that might have gone to wages went for gas, for guns, for agents and spies, for blacklists, for drilling. On the highways, the people moved like ants and searched for work, for food. And the anger began to ferment.
And that's a snatch of The Grapes of Wrath, which I liked. And I also think a lot of us can relate to here in Santa Cruz, because I think it's a universal phenomenon. It didn't just happen in the 30s, as John Steinbeck wrote about it, but it's happening now in 2016 in Santa Cruz toward poor people. And it's a kind of a social sickness, a kind of paranoia that is set in, a kind of we turn against each other because we don't have the focus to identify and effectively attack the large corporations and the government that is oppressing people far more and creating far more danger to people than the stranger. But the stranger is a more available target, and it's also the powerless stranger is a particularly tempting target, because you know you can grab your pickaxe or call your local police officer and drive away that homeless person in the vehicle. Make sure they don't hang out. Create laws that make it criminal to even sit down, as we've seen is the reality on Pacific Avenue. You can sit on a bench, but for no more than an hour. You no longer can sell a tie-dye T-shirt on Pacific Avenue or any of the adjoining streets come June 24th. You can't sell your own homemade jewelry anymore. And any kind of, not just selling and buying, but if you have a table of any kind, a display device of any kind, you want to engage in political activity that involves a chair, you have to be inside one of these shrinking blue boxes, the bracketed blue areas on the sidewalk that are the permitted or exempted zones. Anyway, one has to go, of course, more deeply and talk about the implications of the criminal system, the criminal justice system, too, and the kinds of penalties they're exacting for petty theft and the cutoff of the social services, all that stuff. Anyway, I've learned how to actually get some of these interviews that I mentioned out. So let's begin, see if I can do that effectively.
The group called GEMMA?
Yeah, GEMMA. It's a drug program that works with people in the jails. And after they get out, we get a day program, we get a transitional house, and I'm the founder of that.
How long ago?
2007 they started it, but I started their fundraising and all the efforts, you know, the grassroots efforts in 2003 when I got out of jail.
So you were in jail for?
For just, there was a credit card statement, my daughter's friend's backpack in her room. And they got me for possession of stolen property because it was in my house. And I did 6 months for it. And
charming.
Was getting out to nothing. You know, they give you $200 and they tell you there, now go behave if you're in state prison. And you have to buy your own bus ticket home. Bus ticket from Chowchilla to here cost me $169. So I had $30 when I came back to Santa Cruz.
And yet you worked your way up to an exciting job at New Leaf. And,
right. And I opened a drug program, so all of us aren't alcoholics and drug addicts. You know, there's a great majority of us, you know, that...
And even those who are alcoholics and drug addicts.
Yeah.
Can do what they... Can
they
do
are out here, and that's their choice, you know, but, you know, don't look at all of us like that, you know. Okay. They got to sleep, too, you know, thank God.
What about this GEMMA program? You say it was taken over by Monica Martinez's...
Encompass, yeah.
Encompass. Keep forgetting that word.
Yeah.
Encounter and Gross.
So hopefully they're still doing what I set it up to be, you know, because... Grown women with no minor kids, when we get out of jails or prisons or something happens like now, there's no place for us. You know, there is no place for us. People who don't have kids, you know. And I'm not a drug addict, so it's like I'm not using, so I can't go into a drug program and then get housing.
Well, become a drug addict and you go into a drug program.
There it is, or an alcoholic. They'd have me in an apartment already, you know.
Or you could become a nuisance downtown and claim you're a drug addict.
Here it is, be kind of embarrassing after
you could bring in
a
phony drug test to show that you're a drug addict.
I thought about eating bugs for Social Security. I'm like, I can eat bugs, you know.
Why would advantage what eating bugs at?
Well, then they'll know I'm crazy enough to get paid.
You're bugsy, in other words.
Yeah, bug free. Yeah.
Bugsish.
I'm bug free. I have no bugs on me.
Okay. And again, anything you want to conclude with?
Huh?
Anything you want to finish up with?
A friend.
Well,
what? I didn't hear you.
No, anything you want to finish? This is for free radio.
Oh, yeah. I just want to say, you know, we're some of us out here, you know, really don't want to be out here, but we have no choice. And so we're trying to make the best of a bad situation. And, you know, you ought to look at us every once in a while instead of the guys that you see laying around passed out, because all of us aren't like that. Most of us aren't like that, you know. And we get preyed on. There's predators out here. And people like me that are weak and skinny, you know, just getting over a major disease, it's not safe. And, you know, it's not safe for anybody out here at night because the rats will eat you. But anyway, peace, well, blessings, people. Blessings, people.
Hey, Ann, thank you.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, I'm so tired of it. I don't understand.
So we're talking with Steve Carter. I used to be with the Freedom Sleepers, but I am now, I guess, a free agent of public, I don't know.
You're a man who's suitably employed.
Suitably employed at the moment, yes, yes.
Not being paid what you should be, but still.
Is anybody ever paid what they should be paid? No. And if they knew what I was
CEOs
worth, they still couldn't report.
CEOs are paid too much. That's
yeah.
But you say that, now I know that you, when you were with the Freedom Sleepers, Steve, you were very, occasionally would break down in incredible pain.
Yes.
And it was really, it was almost painful to watch.
Thank you.
So I just turned away, and it was my approach.
I appreciate that because, you know, as long as nobody's looking at me, I'm not feeling like a jerk for being all messed up at a place where I shouldn't be the spotlight. The spotlight should have been on the injustices that's going on with the homeless community in this area, and there's many of those, you know.
You're in pain. What can you do?
Well, I don't know. I could do what I did, and then in which case everybody, oh, my God, geez. Everybody thought that I was downing on heroin, which I've never done in my life. I just want this to be vindication that all you folks that thought I was downing on heroin, nope, it was actually a tumor. There was actually something wrong.
How long was the tuner?
I would say it was a good, at least half a ruler, a good 6 inches. And then the girth was a good 3.5 inches in diameter.
Did you keep a copy of it for your records?
I wanted to, but unfortunately they did not keep a video copy. They didn't take a video of the surgery, and they did not save any of what they took out of me. They took a lot out, though.
So in other words, they stole your tumor.
They stole my tumor. And then they sent it to UCSF because they couldn't figure out what it was at the first time. You know, at first they had to send it to get a second and a third opinion, and the second and third opinion said it was a muscle tumor. Unfortunately, it was you know, nothing that I could go ahead and keep and put in on a little necklace around my neck and say, I beat you.
But this was something you suffered from for 13 years, and it wasn't diagnosed because you were unable to get insurance.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I believe that since this is a condition that if a doctor did diagnose in you that they have to take care of, they could not use your lack of ability to pay or any other of the normal ways that they use to disqualify poor people from getting medical treatment now these days. They weren't allowed to use that one because with a tumor they would have had to operate and they would have had to find out if it was cancerous or not. And so therefore, instead they diagnosed me with an infection. They said it was an infection.
Well, you got to save money, Steve. Come on.
Well, I understand about saving money, but I mean, when it comes to life...
Hospital expenses are... consider the situation for a hospital administrator. I mean, hospital administrators have a difficult job.
Yes.
The mascot.
Yeah, you know, I figure, you know, it doesn't really matter who you're saving. Magic Johnson had AIDS, but he has the money to get himself, you know, the best drugs and everything. I don't have that money, and there's no way for them to get paid for curing me, so I don't understand why they would ever try to treat me, except for the fact that this is a capitalistic society, and in capitalism, what are you supposed to do? Capitalize on other people's misfortune. And since our whole system of government and our whole system of exchange is based on taking advantage of anybody else, I don't understand why everybody thinks that it's such a bad thing that everybody's cutthroat and tries to get over on everybody, you know, because that's what we employ. That's what we
want.
That's
a very enlightened attitude. No. I'm glad you're finally coming around.
I'm coming around to realize that I'm not one of those people that's going to take advantage of somebody else's misfortune. And so therefore, in a capitalistic society, I am probably worse than getting with a homeless person. I am somebody that believes in the optimistic approach of we should all take care of each other and we should all have enough.
It's like a bunch of communists to me, man.
But check it out. Communism is not such a bad thing. If you think about a communist or socialist, well, who was it? Karl Marx that came up with socialism? And I think the whole reason that America, who takes advantage of the world's misfortune, like the world, like we take advantage of everybody's misfortune, and then Americans sit here and we ask, why the fuck is the Middle East hating us so much? Well, because we take advantage of everything that they do. You know what I mean? We take advantage of their crisis. We take advantage of their, you know, their good fortune. We take advantage of anything because we capitalize on everything that we can, including ourselves, including our people, our workforce, our base. Are people that have been here for years, and it doesn't matter if you're an immigrant or not. If there's a way that we can make money off of you, we're going to do it. Because that's what America stands for. We stand for bullshit, and still we think we're the best.
Speaking of bullshit, did Dominican ever refuse you service?
Dominican did not refuse me service. As a matter of fact, what they did was they brought me in and they diagnosed me with something that they knew was inaccurate because I told them from the gate, this is what you're going to think you're going to find, and it's also a symptom. Thank you. And this is also a system of control. You know what I mean? If somebody is too sick or too hurt to help themselves, then they're also too sick and too hurt to oppose us. So as long as we keep everybody hurt and ailing from a drug, then we can, A, keep capitalizing on them by selling them drugs that are never going to cure their problem. Or we can, B, you know what I mean, put them in a class where they're so hurt and so debilitated or disabled, yes, that they cannot help themselves, that we would never have to worry about them being a threat to us. As a matter of fact, if I was to fight on the streets right now against a tank or something, I wouldn't be any help because I'm, you know, recovering from surgery that eventually, finally, you know, got taken care of 13 years after the fact, and I lost a lot.
How does your skin color have anything to do with this?
I don't think so. I don't think that my skin color had anything to do with me getting this disease or this cancer or whatever that, you know, this tumor that grew inside of me. I think... the fact that I was black and that I didn't have any insurance, it doesn't matter what color you are, they're trying to take your money. The only people that worry about color in this in the USA are the people that are conditioned to be that way. People in Watts, the people in New York that are so rich that if you're black and you're in their neighborhood and you're not in Queens or Harlem or something, that you're out of place. You know what I mean? Those are the people that are a problem with when it comes to race.
Santa Cruz?
No. Because if you are able to afford stuff in Santa Cruz has no problem taking all your money.
And what percentage of the African-American community actually has that kind of money?
Oh, no. If you're black and you're in Santa Cruz, you're either a pimp or a drug dealer. I mean, that's what it is. Like, they couldn't understand why I wasn't selling drugs.
Or perhaps you work for a nonprofit.
Well, actually, what I work for is CVS, and I would love to say that I would love to say that CVS is all about the people and all about caring about the community, but as an employee there, I have learned that what they taught me in my orientation training with a good orientation trainer is that she is thinking with her heads in the cloud. She has no idea that this corporate organization doesn't care about the people, doesn't care about anybody except for making money, and that's why all of the policies that they have, including you're on a final written notice if you buy any food for the homeless people with your own money, which I did, unfortunately, on the clock. And so therefore, I'm on a final written notice.
What does that mean?
If I buy any food for anybody, if somebody comes in the middle of the night, because we're a 24-hour store, and they're hungry, and they haven't eaten anything, and in the middle of the night in Santa Cruz, there's nobody feeding. And as a matter of fact, I don't think there's anybody feeding past 4 o'clock, because Food Not Bomb starts at 4 o'clock, they end at 5 o'clock, and then, you know what I mean? If you don't eat by then,
on
you're
Tuesday,
pretty much
Freedom burnt. Sleepers feeds, but that's not true.
Good plug. But these are the things that people need to know. And there's actually a few businesses down here that even though they've been threatened with losing their business license, with losing their ability to stay in business where they're at, you know, they still try to on the slender, so I'm not going to use any of their names. But they on the slender, they take care of some of the people that need to eat. But the business, the city is seriously trying to force that out because they don't want any homeless people here, hence the RD law.
Well, it's bad for business.
Well, it's not just bad for business. It's bad for their business. But if you think about it, it's actually good for business because if there's anybody that's going to be at the register and do what all these register associates at all these businesses, Best Buy, CVS, any place where they have a person taking your money at the register, there's always a whole bunch of gimme or grab bag items at the register that they try to draw your attention to because even though you're leaving the store and you're done with your shopping, there's other things. They want you to buy just this extra thing, just this extra thing. And they actually try to push those sales. You know, they try to push their credit card 5%, 10% discounts so that you'll actually get those add-on sales, they call them. Now, let me ask you, what's the difference between an add-on sale at the supermarket or an add-on sale from a homeless person on the street with a guitar where one of these tourists are walking by? Now, this is money.
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question, Steve.
Well, I would love to answer
earlier
it.
Earlier today, well, I'm going to answer it for you.
You handle that, man.
I mean,
it's your radio show.
I'm white, after all. Think of it that way.
I'm going to take a back seat. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Back of the bus?
So, same thing.
Same thing. Yeah. If you go by the bookshop Santa Cruz, it may be the barber shop next to the bookshop Santa Cruz. It might be the St. George Hotel. You'll see a sign about don't give to panhandlers because it's not good for them.
It's not good for them, no. I don't understand why it's not good for them. I don't think they understand that it is good for them. Now, see, here's my issue with that, is the fact that when a tourist gives a homeless person money, this is money that they have not budgeted for food. This is money that they have not budgeted for their stay at the hotels. This is money that basically is extra money because they're not going to give a homeless person money that's going to take away from their kids having a good time in Santa Cruz. This is a vacation that we took. They're going to give money that they can afford to give out. This is money that would have been in their pockets when they went back to wherever they're from. Zimbabwe, we'll say. Okay.
This man admires your dog.
Everybody admires Shadow. He's the man, dude. I'll tell you what, that collar, the only reason he's wearing a collar, because I like to put harnesses on him because he's a little dog. You got to pick him up out of the street sometimes when big dogs are playing with him. And I don't want to break his neck. But the only reason he's wearing that is there was a guy that paid for a hooker and gave the hooker this necklace. And she liked my dog so much that she gave it to my dog. And just as a reminder to him, to let him know that if you ever throw anything at my dog again, you know what I'm saying, he wears it around every day. I do not allow him to wear collars. Because, like I'm saying, I don't want to break
his neck. This is a well-to-do dog.
This is a well-to-do dog. He is poor, just like me. He sleeps with me in my sweatshirt at night. But I'll tell you what, he loves everybody, and everybody loves him. And if you guys ever see Shadow in the streets, do not be afraid, because he will come
up
to you.
What kind of a dog is Shadow?
He's part Skipper Key, part Chihuahua. He looks more Chihuahua than Skipper Key, but if you see a little black bat walking around with a little black dude, then that's probably him.
Now, we're going to leave it there, Steve. We'll give you the last word.
The last thing I want to say is this, is don't burn any bridges because you never know what color the next person is going to be in power in this country because ethanol or whatever is going to be the next main thing. But I'm just telling you, if everybody's made to capitalize on everybody, then the person with the most people is going to win. And if you think about it, that's not going to be white.
That's no true. Way. Thank you very much, Steve, and may the devil be with you. And here's a violin guy in front of the Penny Ice Creamery and the bookshop Coonerty.
And that was, I call him Shadow Side Steve. Among other things, he was a really strong worker with the Freedom Sleepers for the first few months and eventually had to take employment in order to survive. And he's very articulate, as you can see, about these issues, and I'm glad I ran into him. I haven't seen him in quite a while. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and The name of the show is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, and I'm Robert Norris, and I'm going to try to get through to Catnip Kate Wells, who I was able to reach, and actually we may be able to get her on the line. Let's see here. We should be ringing shortly. But maybe not. Well, no, we're ringing. That's good. So we should have a breakthrough pretty quick. Hello? 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 Well, maybe not. Can you hear me? Hi, can you hear me? What's coming up tomorrow, actually? Yeah, okay. We got a couple. I mean, we can roll into some other subjects, too. Let's hang on here. All right. So, can you hear me, Kate? Hello. Now, it's trying one more time. You can hear me now? Yeah, I know. I'm just not sure if we're going out now. Oh, I think I see what the problem is. Sorry. Hang on. I bet you can hear me now. Can you? I bet you can hear me now.
I can hear you now, too.
All right. Sorry about all. This is the first time I've been in the studio, and it's a new studio. It's got its, you know, you got to kind of work at getting it together here. So, Kate Wells, you are an attorney for how many decades?
Oh, God. Over three. Over three decades.
And
35 years.
And tomorrow, I've described the case, the motions hearing, but is there anything about this case that particularly interests you that you might want to mention? Other than the fact that it's being done to try to secure video from the police department, audio. I guess you've expanded the discovery motion to include other things as well regarding the Freedom Sleepers and me specifically, actually.
Yeah. I want to know, I would like to know what went on, what was happening behind the scenes, having to do with them changing the location of the city council agenda.
And I guess, I hope I made that clear, but they moved the city council agenda display device, the glass display, out onto the sidewalk. They actually put a second one out on the sidewalk, where previously there had only been this one display right outside the city council offices.
And which if they did in fact keep you from seeing it on a 24-hour day basis for 72 hours before the meeting is a violation of the Brown Act.
And explain what the Brown Act is.
The Brown Act is a public is to protect the public from private negotiations going on in the city or the county that behind closed doors. In other words, it keeps them from making agreements outside of the public domain as far as public issues. There are a few exceptions and having to do with litigation and personnel matters. It's basically disclosure to the public of what's going on behind the scenes in the city.
You fought a historic case for 12 years nearly.
Yeah.
The city council had me busted for raising my arm quietly in a mock Nazi salute and then telling me to leave the chambers and I wouldn't
arresting
leave.
You.
And then arresting me and holding me, and the way you approached it was a First Amendment violation, of my right to be there. But it wasn't it also a violation of the Brown Act that guarantees my right to be in a public meeting?
Well, it doesn't guarantee you to be in a public meeting if, in fact, you're disrupting the meeting.
Right, but the issue, of course, our claim was we weren't disrupting, and indeed, the disrupting charge was dropped. and yeah. never filed against me by the you know, the district attorney.
Right, right. But that's a lesser included action, and the big action is the First Amendment violation of your civil rights.
And I also I think it's significant that you were able to win this victory in the en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit that essentially reaffirmed that a violation of city council rules is not necessarily disruption, as is being repeatedly claimed by mayor after mayor in Santa Cruz.
Right. Yeah, they are definitely... what happened is, when we went to trial, of course, after winning that great decision, and it is a published decision, by the way, a unanimous decision by the 13 judges?
I think so, yeah.
13 judges of the Ninth Circuit, including the Chief Justice, the Chief Judge, ruled in our favor. And then we finally did get to trial. I mean, after we read the Ninth Circuit three times, they kept, the judge was against us all the way. He didn't like the case, and so he kept trying to dismiss it. And so we kept going to the Ninth, and they kept reinstating it. And at any rate, we finally got to trial, and we got the worst jury that I have seen in all of the trials that I've done in 35 years.
You know, and you wouldn't have known it by, you know, by looking at them, right? I mean, did you predict the result, which was, in spite of the fact that I engaged in no violent or even, you know, extended disruptive activity at city council, I simply displeased council member Fitzmaurice,
mm-hmm.
who just said, you know, we want him out of here and so forth, and that was taken up by the mayor. They found that the actions of the two mayors, Fitzmaurice and Crone, were completely blameless, and that they granted, you know, no, I didn't lose anything, I wasn't convicted of anything, but they were freed of any responsibility for what they did.
Well, I was not happy with the jury from the beginning. We had nobody who had ever taken part in a protest of any sort. There was one person who had taken part in some sort of a demonstration, and he was, of course, excused immediately by the other side. And all of them were corporate types. And in analyzing what happened after the fact, they're bringing their corporatist attitude towards this, and that's not something you would ever do in a corporate meeting. And so I think that they were prejudiced to begin with against the idea that you could do something like that without some kind of punishment, because they are taught to be little automaton robots and do whatever the boss says to do.
And of course, what I did was, of course, is I raised my hand at a mock Nazi salute when three speakers were denied access to the microphone, as I felt, and I think the time clock showed, were guaranteed by the mayor, but then we were essentially shut down, and a policeman actually escorted one person out, and the second person was threatened with arrest.
Right.
I didn't even bother to come up to the mic. I just simply raised my arm quietly as sort of a, you know.
And it didn't cause any kind of disruption. You can see from the videotape that it didn't cause a disruption.
Right.
And Tim Fitzmaurice, in his little point of order, clinched the fact that it had nothing to do with the disruption, that it had to do with it being beneath the dignity
of this body.
Get that one. Beneath the dignity of the body. So, you know, I mean, the irony is it's pregnant with irony. You know, when you think about what they did was just solidify exactly what you did, and that is calling them a bunch of Nazis. I mean, they arrested you for your viewpoint.
And, of course, the jury didn't recognize that, but you said it was a hostile judge from the beginning that was...
very hostile.
And you're not looking forward, I think, to Judge Maraganda on tomorrow morning. He's not your favorite. In fact, you've kind of avoided the local courts because I think you feel often what defendants or perhaps you as an attorney don't get the fairest of shakes.
Well, no. I mean, you know, you look at the judiciary, the local judiciary, and most of them are former DAs who have worked with hand in hand with the cops. The majority of my cases are police misconduct cases, and so you just there's no way you're going to get a fair shake locally. And politically, they have to be reelected. They know, you know, what side their bread is buttered on, and they're going to rule with the government, no matter what the government is saying. That's just the way it happens.
I mean,
there have been a few renegades over the years.
Judge Watts, for example, yeah.
Judge Watts, and of course, how long did he last?
Not very long. Now, we're wondering when you're going to run for judge.
Somebody wants to put up the money. I'll try. I'll try.
Well, so what are you going to do tomorrow? What's your strategy going to be tomorrow if you feel like you can discuss it on the air? I mean, I don't think it's terribly, you know, confidential, but...
You don't think that Judge Maraganda is listening in?
I doubt it.
Or as I call him, Judge Marijuana.
Is that because he has a nasty attitude toward marijuana or because he's a secret smoker?
His alternate name is Maraganja. We go way back, and we go way back to a case with Alan Brady. And he was the DA prosecuting that case, and we got into Judge Kelsey's court, who Judge Kelsey was one of those renegades, and he chastised Maraganda in no uncertain terms.
And we should say that the Brady case was a case of a guy who was raided at midnight, broke down his door for his marijuana seeds, which he was making
hemp seeds.
His what?
Yeah, his hemp seeds.
Hemp seeds that he was using for. Not particularly. They were sterile hemp seeds, right? They were used for other purposes than intoxication.
Yep. They were absolutely legal. And what happened is Alan was washing them in small batches. I think they come from somewhere in the Orient. I don't know, but at any rate, he was washing them in small batches, and it was taking him forever. You know, and he made, you know, butter and ice cream and all kinds of wonderful products out of it. Anyway, so he found a seed company down in Watsonville that was willing to do the whole big whatever, I don't know how many pound bag at once. So that was great news. And so he took the seeds down there and they accepted them, and the next thing, their next call was to the sheriff's department,
and they busted in his door. But let me get
back.
They followed
him around actually, and that was really funny because it was basically from health food store to health food store. Really,
but you won that case. You, in spite of Maraganda, and I've had problems with him as well as a. As a private attorney, he was prosecuting food not bombs in San Francisco on behalf of the Coal Valley Improvement Association. He wanted to drive food not bombs out of the neighborhood and not unfamiliar ways that we see in Santa Cruz trying to eliminate social services and so forth. But how would you describe what's likely to happen with Maraganda and what your strategies are?
Anyone's guess. I really can't predict, Robert. I just can't predict what he's willing. You know, I don't know how far he'll go. I mean, I have seen things in his courtroom that I could not believe. So, you know, he may, in fact, deny your motion and then tell you you're headed for trial. You know, that may be what happens.
What would be the next step you'd recommend for me if that's the case?
Well, we could ask. We could ask for additional time to take a writ up to the 6th District Court of Appeal. That's probably going to suffer the same fate as the denial of your emotion. But who knows?
To remind listeners, this is an emotion to get them to release video, audio, and all other documents around the ticketing of me in an area which was, you know, access to the city council agendas, which was a clearly designated path and which was also on city council property.
There's also an exception in the ordinance.
Right, that's what I mean. It was on a clearly designated path. That is an exception to the ordinance.
It should be a complete defense to their charge.
It should be. Of course, that will not really be the defense. That would come at trial, and that is now scheduled for the 24th of June, a week from tomorrow. But we're going to. I guess the attempt will be to get more time to prepare for this trial. Even if we don't get the discovery motion, I'm guessing that's probably the best thing to do. I don't know. I'm a little, you know, I'm cynical about this whole situation, but I'd like to see it used as a rallying cry for what really impressed me was you probably weren't there, but there was a video showing of a documentary about the Freedom Sleepers at the Del Mar Theater about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the most impressive scenes were police 20 strong going after people who were sleeping at City Hall.
Yeah.
And I think getting the police video, would that be significant? I was saying earlier in the show that it would be significant. If we get the police video and bring it into the same judge, Paul Maraganda, when we go to trial, or I bring it in or you bring it, whether we're doing it together or apart, what do you think that would have more impact on Maraganda, having police video?
No.
No.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just more of the same, you know. I mean, this city is intent upon making the homeless issue as expensive as possible for everyone, and you know they issue fines that can't be paid, then they have to, pay the sheriff, deputies to go after people with warrants, and then so then there's more fines and more fines that people can't pay. You know, if we all know this, if you added up all the money they spend in trying to enforce these ridiculous laws that they have, there would be plenty of money to house the homeless. You know, I mean, it's just insane but they don't, they don't seem to look at it that way. So, I don't know. I guess it's their system of full employment or something,
full employment for a certain class of
exactly,
people.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
I said for those who want to see you in action tomorrow, You'll be down at the courthouse.
Department 1, I think, right?
That's correct. It's Paul's department. And it's, don't call him Paul, by the way. He doesn't like that when you call him Paul. It's, Your Excellency or Your Honor. Your Worship. Whatever.
Genuflect a few times then throw a Nazi salute at him.
Well, yeah, that would go over big. So, will you be speaking outside or about this issue at all if people want to get more information on it?
If people have questions, I'll answer them. It's really a pretty straightforward thing. We're just asking for what we should have, what they should have provided us already.
I think you're right.
So
one last question. If you win this, if we get discovery, and then by some unusual circumstance, Paul Maraganda finds me not guilty, does that mean that you think that we have you're interested in a case that would go to federal court for false arrest?
Well, sure. I mean, and obviously there are plenty of related cases, too, you're not the only one who was arrested.
Correct.
Right? So, I mean, if it was just one arrest, I would say probably that wouldn't be worth it, you know, filing a big federal civil rights action. But the fact that that there are several people who are affected by this, I think it might be worth pursuing. I don't know. It's something we have to, you know, have to analyze and figure out.
Well, Kate, thank you for taking the time, and I know that this kind of
eats
into your personal time, so get back to your life. And
it's the Warrior game.
well, whatever.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that was Attorney Kate Wells. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is a live broadcast, and I am periodically keeping my eye on the blinker. So if you do want to call in, like in the next 5 minutes, I will try to keep an eye on it. And if you want to say anything about this case, about the Freedom Sleepers, sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, something that's happened to you in the last week and regarding the police department or the Parks and Rec Rangers, do so. 427-3772. And until that happens, we will continue rolling through the different interviews that I ran into this week, and I may even stop to comment on them. I'm going to probably skip this one where I saw four law enforcement officers, we have a caller, confronting someone on Highway 9, and that was, I stopped my car, pulled over, walked back up there, and started audioing it, and perhaps looking like I was videoing it, but let's take this caller first before I go on about what happened there. You're on Free Radio. This is Robert.
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, that sounds like broadcaster Merlin. Hey, Merlin.
Yeah, I got that wonderful delay on the radio here. It's pretty strange.
You got to turn down your radio, mister. And there I am going down.
Yeah, I heard you say that three times. I heard getting myself talking again. It's like an echo chamber.
So,
I don't get it.
You're planning to be doing your show on Tuesday?
I don't know. Am I?
Okay. And do you want to tell us a little bit about your show for those who haven't heard about it or heard it?
Oh, that Atlanta show is about 20 years old. Kate Wells has supported it a couple of times professionally, and I got to say she's one of my heroes.
What has she done?
You know,
what
it's a music show. It's old school music.
Merlin, what is 60s, 70s, and 80s
music.
Yeah, Merlin, what has Kate Wells done that you found heroic? What has Kate Wells done that you've...
I had a couple of issues with community television in the past, and so she represented me in We Won.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I know that you...
I mean, all I wanted was to get my television show back. I was suspended for a while. I don't really want to get into the details of it, but, you know, they made a big stink about it, and so I didn't know what to do, and I asked Kate Wells, Hans, and I looked in the phone book, and we didn't really call, so we asked Kate Wells, and she helped us out, and...
That sounds great.
Found out that it was kind of like, you know,
that's true.
What people were saying, and...
You know, that sounds good. I just wonder, do you have any sense of where community television is now? I know it's moved from downtown out to Soquel Avenue.
Well, I have no idea, man. I thought it was in the same location, on Pacific.
No, I think it's moved. But I'm just wondering how the internal management is going. I guess I know
my trainer, Mazziars. He's a good friend of mine, and he's on the board now, and he was my sound guy for over a decade, and he invited me to a grand opening yesterday, but he gave me like a two-hour notice, and I had no idea it was even happening yesterday, so I didn't go, but...
Well, I guess if you get more information about that, I'd be curious, because I know we've had some serious concerns about it raised when I was talking about the issue last year. Anything you want to say on the air before I roll back to my interviews?
No, I wish community television good, the best, and happy to hear from Kay Wells. And so I asked you, Robert, how is our new studio?
It is... I'm surrounded by video boards and other strange-looking machines. Actually, not so strange.
Is there any spare room in there?
There's not much.
We can't play pool, sit in a hot tub kind of stuff.
What's that?
We can't play pool or sit in a hot tub in there.
I'm afraid not. No, not at this time. You'll have to do that next door or, you know, maybe down the road somewhere.
I mean,
Well, if you know how to work it, that's one of the things that always is a problem when you come into a new studio. You don't quite know what to do, but...
Yeah, I mean, I understand that we're using headphones, and I usually cue stuff up with the headphones, and it's kind of, might be a little confusing. I might need some supervision, some adult supervision on my first show.
Yeah, I think Dennis has been trying to, I think he may be doing some work on that, but let me talk to you more about that off air later and dump you and move on to my next item here.
Okay, buddy, keep it up. Keep up the good work, and I appreciate your show. I appreciate your energies. I don't know if the people out there listen. Most people probably know that we don't get paid for being DJs, and we need DJs, and we need a place that Merlin can actually stand up in.
Very true. Talk to you later, Merlin.
All right. God bless.
Bye-bye. And Merlin is correct that this is a very cramped studio and really a temporary thing, I hope. We can't really have the numbers of people that we were able to have in the old studio, which is sometimes three or four at a time. I think the official limit was four, but I sometimes stretched it. Here you can't really stretch it without playing Let's Cram Into a Phone Booth and call the Guinness Book of World Records. So, again, the phone number here, if you want to call in, is 427-3772. It's free radio, of course, that you're listening to. And here's an interview with Meriwether Mike.
I'm here with Meriwether Mike.
And as you can imagine, I'm having a little bit of a technical difficulty, but I think we're okay. Maybe not. Let's try again.
I'm here with Meriwether Mike, and he's developing a plan having that essentially is in the aftermath of the Orlando shooting at the nightclub. He pointed out, and I'm going to paraphrase you, Mike. He pointed out that you hear Hillary talking about gun control and Trump talking about immigration, but the real issue, as far as you're concerned, is.
It's a hate-based crime. Not that it's because it's Islam or any of the ISIS stuff, but it's just the focus on differences that evolves into hate and hate-related crimes.
Yeah, well, I think you should mention that if that's what your thought is, that there isn't an opportunity for at least some of us, I imagine you as well, as a regular to speak at the Red Church every Monday. There's a meal there, 5:30, 6 o'clock. Just have your little ticket, and don't put your food on the grass, and don't take your food outside. There's all kinds of little new regulations. But if you can deal with all that shit, which I get annoyed even hearing about and constantly inveigh against, there's also a group of people there who may or may not find what you have to say of interest. I usually talk about homeless and civil rights issues. Tomorrow, for instance, there's a city council meeting. And
well,
brainwash? I mean, brainstorm. Brainstorm.
Oh, there's a tag to that. I was going to tag into that. You know, you bring up the
theme tag.
Yeah. You bring up the news spin, and then you say, "Hey, let's look at our local hate crimes. You know, what are we doing locally?"
I think that's an excellent idea, Mike.
That we're focusing on differences and creating boundaries and ill will.
Yeah. Thank you. And Mike is... And we're standing in front of this vacant storefront, which used to be Bunny's Shoes in the old days. Then it was another kind of shoe store. Now it's vacant, and we have a performer... performing a little music downtown. Hey, Joey, any reports?
Yeah, I seen one of my stolen bikes.
And what did you do when you saw it?
I called the police up and asked them to cut the lock, what's on it, what was actually my bike.
Right.
And they wouldn't do it.
Wow. How long ago did this happen?
I seen it today.
That's okay. Where was the bike?
Over at the library.
And how would you describe the bike for those who want to keep an eye out for it?
Gray and black, Cypress Giant.
And is it still there?
No, it was gone by the time I got back there to go and cut the lock off of it.
What did the police say when you reported this to them?
There ain't nothing we can do about it. I was like, so you much rather give people fucking camping tickets and bullshit like that and she ran away from me.
Again, a few technical problems that I'm struggling with. It turned out that this may have been more of a private dispute that Joey, who's a regular Freedom Sleeper, had with somebody else regarding ownership of the bike, or rather that he couldn't produce evidence that he had purchased or gotten the bike, you know, in a legal exchange. Let's see if I can continue that. Well, let's see if we can go on with that.
Where was the bike?
Over at the library.
And how would you describe the bike for those who want to keep an eye out for it?
Gray and black, Cypress Giant.
And is it still there?
No, it was gone by the time I got back there to go and cut the lock off of it.
What did the police say when you reported this to them?
There ain't nothing we can do about it. I was like, so you much rather give people fucking camping tickets and bullshit like that and she ran away from me.
Now, this was an officer you talked to on the street, or?
Yeah. I called it up, and I was like, that's my stolen bike.
And did she actually see the bike? Was she
Yeah. And she was like, how do I know it's yours? I was like, you much rather give people camping tickets, smoking tickets.
Sitting near a store tickets? Being outside the blue box tickets?
Yeah, all that bullshit. And instead of giving my bike back.
So you have no, of course, evidence that it's your bike, like a, I don't know, bill of sale or a...
No, I don't know. It was stolen from me. I bought it off of Robert Palmer.
Right.
And Robert Palmer sold it to Brandy, and now Brandy's saying it's hers. And I paid $100 for it 4 months ago.
And so, but you don't think Brandy is currently the current person?
Yeah, she came up and told somebody, "Oh, that's my bike."
So there is you're having a definite dispute about this bike.
Yeah.
But you will be at the Freedom Sleep Out tomorrow night. Perhaps.
Yeah, it's like my foot's getting a whole lot worse.
Your foot?
Yeah, my heel spurs. Yeah, it's like I got to go in on the 16th of this month, and they'll probably grind them off.
And is that in a painful process?
After it gets done, no.
It's about 5:10. I just finished a meal here in front of the New Leaf, a salad actually. Had a chat with a Metro Writers Association worker who advised me that a meeting is upcoming. Today is Monday the 13th. It's going to be happening on Thursday the 16th. Unfortunately, after this show has aired, or after the next edition of the show is aired, apparently there's going to be some discussion at the Regional Transportation Commission, either. Of a sales tax coming up that the Metro riders would like to actually go to people who are, well, the bus services rather than widening of Highway 1. However, we have a man on the street here who has a comment on many issues. Billy, any thoughts on anything you want to present to our 7 listeners?
They're mutating a bacteria at UCSC to become a virulent consumer of organic waste.
Significant that is that as that is for Billy, it's not terribly significant for me, so I'm going to move on.
Now, I know you used to be a Canada activist in the old days. How are you doing? Are you indoors or outdoors?
I'm indoors.
And how is the rent treating you?
My rent's only $257.
Will you live in a closet or a shoebox? What's the deal?
No, I'm subsidized because I'm disabled and I got a HUD subsidy. Yeah, that's why.
What kind of compromises do you need to make with landlords? You don't even necessarily have to discuss the current one. I don't want to jeopardize your well-being here, but have you had to make compromises with landlords over the last couple decades in spite of being subsidized and in spite of being a familiar figure here on the sidewalks of Pacific Avenue?
Well, it's a give and take. Landlords are people, you know. They're stuck in their own little freaking world, just like tenants are. And I guess the last compromise I made, well, actually, it's not a compromise. I'm going to sue the lawyer for my last apartment complex.
He was a landlord as well? Or?
No, he was just a lawyer for a company that owned 2,000 apartment buildings from Singapore to New York. And they own Hidden Creek Apartments.
Which is on Button Street.
Hidden Creek Apartments on Button Street is owned by a corporation that owns 2,000 apartments from Singapore to New York.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you were saying the last compromise you had to make was? If one comes to mind.
Agreeing to drop my lawsuit about rat damage in exchange for them dropping their eviction. Getting my eviction up. They evicted me after I sued them for rat damage.
Well, isn't that a retaliatory eviction? Can't you successfully fight that?
I have a year to get back to that, and I don't.
I understand that if you are attempting to organize as a tenant or you're protesting some kind of misconduct by the landlord, and in retaliation they evict you, and they're stupid enough to say so, you can. Is it that hard to get actually some kind of judgment from the court that allows you to stay?
No, the landlord was great. She helped me get into my new apartment. She said she would rent to me again. But the lawyer for the corporation that owns the apartment building filed an eviction lawsuit 2 weeks after I moved out. He's going to lose his law license. That was a false police report, false filing.
Name of the lawyer, if you wish to say?
No, I'd have to look it up.
Okay. And we've been talking with, if you wish to say?
Billy Cayley.
Thanks, Billy.
Yeah, I love it. We all love Robert.
I would hope so.
Robert's great.
Thanks, Billy. So I'm talking with
Greg Ortiz.
And Greg, you... you haven't played on down here on Pacific, but you do play on the wharf. You play guitar?
Yes, and harmonica.
Uh-huh. And you say that you did have some concerns about the hosts, which you've talked about, or the hostile hospitality crowd, as I call them. They just passed by a few minutes ago and said hello, and I told them to get a job, as I usually do.
At McDonald's.
Or somewhere. You know, I mean, stop.
They've got the uniform.
They have the uniform. They're the yellow jackets. There's no
question. And the little caps, too.
It's true. So, but you say things have been relatively mellow?
Well, for those of us that play on the wharf, thank God. Because right now, the wharf is low priority for the police, so they don't have the hospital...
Hospital fatality
crew down there, so...
Whoever the first alarm security or the Pacific security company or whatever.
The fellow that works the weekdays, Monday through Thursday, he's a blessing. He knows what's going on. He knows that he's aware that the buskers are an asset or enhance the community. Now it's the weekend guy that you have to watch.
And you know the names of these guys?
Eric is the awesome dude that works Monday through Thursday,
mm-hmm.
And Kevin the cop I call him because I mean if he could get to the doorway of Police Academy, he would have grabbed you to the line.
He certainly loves that kind of thing. Huh? So have you had a run-in with him? Has he run you off? Or?
Oh, he did. He's never run me off. I mean, he introduced himself when he first started and pretended to be everybody's friend. But he did run one young busker. It was his first day on the wharf. He told him, "You cannot play here."
Really?
Absolutely. And I said, oh, he's trying to do the divide and conquer. strategy. You know, make half of us trust us and half of us distrust
us. Did you advise the poor newcomer that he could play?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Did he stay and play or did he leave?
He stayed. Well, actually, what he did first, that was before I met him. He shared the experience with me later. He begged and reasoned with the security guard, fed to his power trip, I got to play here. I need the money. Please let me play here, you know.
And he abandoned his dignity and self-respect in order to get a few coins. Sounds like the Grapes of Wrath.
That's what Fatso was looking for.
Using more epithets to describe our fine security
absolutely,
forces.
Absolutely, absolutely, you know. The mighty powder puff.
Well, my goodness. What can I say?
Not a whole lot. You can laugh with me, though.
I could record your laughter here for future.
You have my permission.
Folks to join in. Yeah, for sure.
Too bad you don't have a video camera. I could do my impersonation with him.
And you are sort of lumbering along in a elephantine kind of
walk. He hasn't had a stroke yet, but I mean, it's coming.
You're here. Well, that's. I guess I asked you originally, you said you had a positive report, and I guess your positive report is you haven't seen a lot of overt ticketing and harassment going on either here or on the wharf?
Well, I spend very little time on Pacific Avenue.
Where we are now.
Exactly. No, thank God there hasn't been any ticketing, to my knowledge, recently on the wharf.
Well, that's good. Not very exciting, mind you, but it's still good. That's still good.
Well, we have the other kind of excitement where, you know, little children dance to our music and give us thumbs up and...
Hopefully a little money.
That too. Like I said, we get lots of positive feedback from the tourists and the locals that still patronize the wharf.
Well, that's good. That's good. And we have been...
Very good. Yeah. It's very Santa Cruz, in the positive sense, excuse me.
Certainly. And we've been talking with...
Greg Ortiz.
Thank you, Greg, and may the host not be with you.
Thank you so much, there. Thank you so much,
yes,
Robert.
No, thank you, Greg. Keep us advised. No, keep
that was fun.
Well, yeah. America, or at least Santa Cruz.
Well, I didn't mention this about the weekend security guard, but see... He used to follow me into Gilda's.
When I
should go and eat there, you know, take my lunch break on the weekends.
Was he panhandling for food, or what was the deal?
No, I pay for my food.
Right, but he was...
I don't know if he paid for his food, but I'd go in there and eat, and then after I'd have my order, and it would be sent to me, I'd look over to my left shoulder, and he'd be across the aisle, always consistently. After I'd go in there, order, receive my order, and start eating, he'd be on the... opposite aisle to my left.
Well, maybe he has a thing for you, Greg.
God forbid.
Indeed. We'll leave it there, though. It's about...
Or possibly a thing for Gilda's.
I have perhaps been missing phone calls because I'm used to listening with my ear, which is a little hard with earphones on, and we don't have a ringer anyway. So if you have tried to call in the last few minutes... or in the last hour and a half, actually, please try again right now, and I will keep my eye steadily on the ringer and attempt to put you on the air so you can ask a question, make a comment, give us a bit of an update, whatever you got in mind, we can do that. So, again, the number is 427-3772. It's 427-3772. I guess some of the issues that have been interesting me recently, although I feel kind of powerless in front of the juggernaut, but I did squeak up at City Council a few times on Tuesday. They have their meetings every second and fourth Tuesday, and I'm not sure if they're going on vacation in July or August. They used to be doing it regularly in August. I think last year they did it in July. There were a number of items that I talked about, and I may mention them again on Sunday when I have more time, but I don't see anybody rushing to call in, so I'm going to go to the Red Church. At least we're going to return to the audio of the Red Church, where I hang out on Mondays, and play for you what they had to say.
Unity on the county is what I hear. Any reports from Free Radio? Okay. So we're talking with a man who tells me that food now bombs will not stop stealing water from the post office. Is that accurate? I assume so, because that's what you just told me. Thank you. And don't be afraid to say who you are. No one's going to hurt you. We're talking with
Staten Wiles.
Stan, you have some comments about the Rangers and the cops?
Yeah, I saw the Rangers taking a bunch of people's tents and taking bikes and their clothes and putting it all in the back of their trucks. And
when was it?
Since the last time I was here, last week. Three different times.
And where were they taking it from?
Over by the freeways, down off the river. The Rangers were down waking these people up yesterday morning, right in front of Trader Joe's on the river. There was two of them down there walking around waking people up, telling them they had to leave. I think they were getting $380 tickets, I believe. That's what it kind of looked like. I was pretty far away.
And so this was, did they also take their tents and property at that time, or was that another time?
No, they didn't take it that, no, they just told them to get up and leave. I think they, I heard a couple people yelling, so I think they got tickets. They were rude to them or something, and they got tickets.
But you did see them on another occasion taking tents and property?
And bicycles and tents and their sleeping bags and their clothes.
When was this?
That was last Monday.
And what time of day?
It was, at two different times on Monday, about 10:30 in the morning and about 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the evening. I didn't have a bike then, I got a bike now. I was walking down along the river on the levee, and I seen these people getting harassed, and their stuff was getting taken away.
Now,
I never seen those people before, I don't even know who they were.
Was there an arrest that happened at the same time, or was it simply they decided to take their property and give them tickets? Or?
They just told them to, I don't know, I was
too far away.
I was a distance away, I didn't want, you know, I didn't...
You didn't go up and strong arm the Rangers to get the fuck out of here.
No, I didn't do nothing.
I will. I like your spaghetti. Cool.
Yeah. CNET's here. I've seen a couple CNET officers already.
And it should be noted that the Rangers are now slated to be taking over the policing job or the snitching job, I guess it's going to be a combination of both, that the hospitality crowd, that's the so-called hosts or hospitality people, as they call themselves, in their little yellow jackets, are doing now on Pacific Avenue. They apparently are being phased out, and the Rangers are being phased in. I'm curious why this is happening. I don't know. I can speculate, but don't really have much grounds for the speculation. But the danger with the Parks and Rec Rangers taking over this situation, as has been pointed out by a couple people at the last HUF meeting yesterday, HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and you could come to one of our meetings if you want, 11 o'clock on Wednesday, free coffee in the morning, and it's at the Sub Rosa Cafe. But what was pointed out about the Rangers at that meeting was that they have the ability to write tickets, whereas so-called hospitality, what I call the hospitality crowd, hostile and masquerading as hospitality folks, hostile to the rights of poor people, in other words. The Rangers have the power to write citations, tickets, costing people hundreds of dollars. And more important than that, or as important, even more important, I would say, is under an ordinance passed by the City Council a couple of years ago and expanded last year, the Rangers have the power to issue immediate stay-away orders from areas they patrol. And that means they can direct you to stay away from this area for a day. And if you don't do that, you can be sentenced to jail for up to a year. And this can all happen without any kind of court action happening. Normally, stay-away orders are something that come out of the courts. But the Ranger stay-away order power was given to them to denude the parks of poor people at night, because people have now been taken have taken to the practice of tossing their infraction tickets or using them as toilet paper, is what the, I doubt anybody does. They don't look that comfortable to use, and they're kind of crispy and icky, but they don't pay them. And you, how could you? I mean, they cost hundreds of dollars. You can get one every night for sleeping, or certainly a couple nights a week, at least if you're a dream catcher, who's a homeless guy who's has acquired hundreds of tickets. And he's currently, I guess, one of the potential plaintiffs in Steve Plaich's long-delayed, when the hell are we going to hear something about it, lawsuit, which he and Tristia Bauman were working on. Now, I think that's actually an earlier lawsuit that never went anywhere, and I shouldn't be one to be too critical of people whose lawsuits don't go anywhere, because that's often been the case with stuff that I've been involved in, or at least it doesn't go to the courts as a final deciding factor, which might not always be the best, but that's the whole point originally of the lawsuit, or at least one of the points. Anyway, you get a lot of tickets. People can't use them. I mean, they don't pay them, and so now they want to have a new practice which allows them to drive people away and out of sight and away from the downtown, which is part of the agenda of some merchants on Pacific Avenue. And I often say the merchant community or the downtown association, and indeed there's certainly some people in that community, but it's not everybody. I'm not saying all the merchants are this way. But I've often recommended that we do protest demonstrations, sleepouts, boycotts, on Pacific Avenue. Any other actions that you're into. I'm not into violent actions myself. They tend to be counterproductive in a community that is dogmatically nonviolent. It doesn't believe in any kind of property damage. And, of course, violence is the wrong word to use, really. I think it's properly used when you're talking about actions against that injure people. Damage to property is something a little different. However much of a no-no and taboo it is, it's quite significantly different, I think, than assaulting someone, threatening someone, hurting someone in some direct way. I'm sure the merchants will claim that the presence of poor people, the presence of performers they don't like, the presence of vendors with jewelry is hurting their business. Some merchants will. Some merchants say the opposite. They say it's ridiculous. This is a draw. We like having those folks out there. They have people, they draw people to Pacific Avenue as part of the cultural scene. Oh, look, Matilda, look at the natives, you know. And however, in a way, dehumanizing that whole, look, we're in Disneyland, look at those peculiar people, maybe. Oh, look at the hippies, dear, let's take a bus through the hate. Nonetheless, if people can make some survival money. And that's, I think, what a lot of jewelers and Sam who's selling T-shirts and James who's selling stones and others do on Pacific Avenue, then it's a good thing. And it's a good thing for the merchants, too, because it draws some people there and it also makes it more likely they'll spend money in the knick-knack shops and in the restaurants and in the cafes and all that sort of thing. But not according to those who want to impose a somewhat more rigid, uncluttered standard. Cynthia Matthews, Pamela Comstock, David Gerasis, Cynthia Chase. Those are council members' names I'm giving out. Let's hear some more. And again, I guess the whole point of my interruption of Stanton's comments was that the dangers of this replacement of Parks and Rec by Parks and Rec Rangers of the Pacific Avenue policing situation is that these folks can give away these stay-away orders without any kind of judicial responsibility. And that is a serious new power that has entered the public domain and is more likely to be used on Pacific Avenue. So let's hear some more of the interview. And do give a call if you have any comments. I've only got a few minutes left in the show. 427-3772 is the number here. 427-FRSC.
I know what they look like. It's almost summertime, so a lot more things are going to disappear. A lot of people are going to get tickets. smoking on the levee, being on the river, being in the place you're not supposed to be, you know you're going to get it here in Santa Cruz.
How long have you lived here?
43 years.
And before this, where did you live?
I lived in San Jose and Sunnyvale and Mountain View, over the mountain.
But you chose beautiful Santa Cruz.
This is the best weather in the world. Absolutely.
And you, have you been outdoors most of that time?
I've been on the sidewalk for 43 years. Wait till people read my book, trying to pretend in the real world.
How can people get a copy of your book?
Huh?
How can people get a copy of your book?
I'm going to get a license. I haven't done it yet. I'm in the process of getting on YouTube.
Have you actually written the book or not?
Oh, yes. The book. Oh, yeah. Oh.
It isn't available anywhere yet?
No, but it will be soon.
Well, I want a copy.
Okay, you will get one. You will get one.
We've been talking with
Stanton Wells.
Thank you, Stanton.
Can you tell me where to get a license for my book?
What do you mean by a license? You don't need a license to publish a book.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, really?
$64. I just don't know where.
Maybe, I'm not sure you mean sell it. Maybe just sell it on
the
street.
Sell my book. $64.
Actually, the new law states, it's going into effect on June 24th, that you can sell your own property on Pacific Avenue even without any kind of license.
They passed this last week.
If you wrote it yourself, if you painted it yourself.
Oh, I wrote it myself. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's correct, but I would double check with the city clerk's office.
I'm going to get a license anyway. Wait until the world reads my book. Wait until the world sees the Voodoo Doll movie, oh boy.
Thank you, Sam. Get that license or just find out about it. I don't think you need one anymore, but
cool.
I could be wrong.
Well, I'm going to get one anyway.
I'm here at the Red Church checking out Steve's latest flyer. Now, is this an update from a reprint? Because I know I've seen a similar flyer.
Nope, this is a brand new one.
And it has a picture of you smiling.
Of course, as I am wont to do.
As you often do. We stand with working men and women, and tomorrow with the Board of Soups, you will be doing something similar with MH Can, correct?
Yeah, there's Oral Communications. There's going to be an opportunity to talk about MH Can and its peer-supported, peer-owned services and our efforts to become a better neighbor and community member.
And what proposals do you have for the Soups that would make that happen?
There aren't any proposals, just oral communication. They're going to be generally reviewing, I think, the mental health budget, which is already set, so we really can't speak to it, but there's an opportunity to talk about it.
You're going there. You have some specific concerns you're bringing up.
Not really. Just an opportunity to speak out, because that's what I do as chairman of the board of directors.
And Steve Plaich is a sort of a problematic figure in some ways. He's the head. He goes joins numerous boards of directors. He's a vice chair of the ACLU. He's on the SCORE, Santa Cruz County. Oh God, it's all about racism. Or actually, it's not about racism. It's about getting grants to talk about racism. He's on the board of the MH Can. That's the consumer peer group, mental health group that I have heard a lot of positive things about, and also I've recently heard some concerns about excluding people from, and I wanted to raise those issues with Steve, and he's ducked away from it. He doesn't want to talk about them. You'll hear me mentioning a few things here, perhaps. But Plaich is running for city council for the third time, and I don't have a lot of confidence that he's going to be pressing, I think, with any kind of militance, an agenda that I would be pressing if I had my say in that way. But on the other hand, he does tend to be far more accessible than any other council candidates, perhaps with the exception of Nate, whose last name I'm not sure of, who's known mostly for making, that I know mostly for making little paper cranes on the Pacific Avenue, and also standing up for the right to chalk legally, not illegally. It's now illegal to chalk political slogans on the sidewalk, even with erasable chalk. This is the nature of our city these days. So anyway, Plaich can be reached. He originally and still claims to be, and to some extent is, has a project called the Homeless Legal Assistance Project. If you want to reach Steve, you've got questions, he's also gone to law school, and he can be helpful in putting together legal matters. In fact, he helped me prepare what was an attempted demurrer to this, sort of it was the precursor to this thing I'm doing tomorrow at 10 o'clock, which is an attempt to suggest that telling people they can't be at City Hall at night is unconstitutional, and therefore the ordinance which creates that is itself unconstitutional, but that really doesn't fly too well, not because it isn't true, and not because even the judges are hostile, but because the ordinance doesn't really state that. The ordinance says it gives the city power to do these things and gives certain people the power to do it, and that if you can find one instance that justifies this, it's hard to throw out an ordinance on its face. That's the problem with arguing that an ordinance is unconstitutional. You have to show that every single instance of this ordinance is likely to be unconstitutional. That's my understanding of what happens if you try to challenge an ordinance as a in this demurrer situation. That's a kind of an action you take before you even say whether you're guilty or not guilty. You say, I don't have to talk about this at all because there's no real good charge against me. I'm not being charged with something that one can really be charged with, therefore I don't have to say whether I'm guilty or not guilty. So, let's hear a little more. Then I'm going to go out on some music. I apologize for the primitive and sort of halting nature of this initial show. I hope we can get a ringer in the studio because I have trouble remembering to keep a close eye on this blinker. I just don't, you know, I'm just doing
too...
You want
to turn the ringer on?
Uh-oh, we have a ringer in the studio in more senses than one.
If you turn the ringer off at the end of your show, you can turn the ringer on during it.
That's Uncle Dennis is coming on the air shortly. So there is a way.
If the ringer on, it's going to disturb our neighbors.
Fair enough.
But yeah.
So we do have a ringer. That's good.
On.
Well, there you are. I think you did tell me that, Dennis, before we started. But I, among the many things you told me, that was one of the things that didn't stick yet. But maybe it will for the
you
next
want
show.
To stick it to you?
You already have, Dennis, on many occasions. So
why don't you just hurry up and finish your show?
I will.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to do. Well, how do you turn the ringer on here, Dennis? What's the story with this? What do you do to turn it on? On the phone, huh? Okay. Dennis is showing me. Oh, that's how you turn the ringer on. Okay.
Ringer low.
I thought it was
how
on
about
the, that? That's good. I thought it was on the board or something.
No.
Okay.
So.
I'll put that back for you. All right. So the ringer is on. So you now have 5 minutes which to call in with brief comments before I...
Well, actually 10, Robert.
I know, but I'm going to give you a little extra time.
Don't shortchange your audience.
I got a respect from the cream to the dregs. I mean, it is a distinguished show. People have been waiting for 9 months to hear your reports. And we've been putting on old shows. People are very tired of hearing that same old show.
Well, we've waited an hour and 50 minutes for you to finish this one.
Exactly. And then now it's about time the new man, or the old geezer, whatever you want to say, comes in. So we'll see how that works. 427-3772 is the number to call in. And until and unless that happens, we're going to finish up with some of these interviews from the Red Church. So here we go.
And for those who are having problems at MHCAN, should they appeal directly to you or to the executive director?
That's entirely within the purview of our executive director, Sarah Leonard.
Okay. And what's the best process for doing that?
I didn't challenge Steve when he said that. It sounds like bullshit to me. I think you can claim that, you know, he doesn't want people to appeal directly to him. Well, who do you appeal to if Sarah Leonard is not giving you the satisfaction you deserve? Though I understand she can be very reasonable, and she's gotten more reasonable recently and less hyped up about holding people accountable or excluding them. There's been some real complaints that she's overacted or overreacted to problems essentially created by the neighbors who are, you know, cracking down on MHCAN, threatening to pull their license, threatening this and threatening that in terms of pressuring the county and the other agencies that fund it or permit it. And that's a serious matter for her. She has one of the better services in town, and that's what I hear from most people who are there. I mean, And they, so she has to worry about that. So people have been, however, then told they can't park nearby because that might offend the neighbors, and the police are surveilling the area and all this kind of stuff. And they might be called to be called as criminals, even if they're not. And that kind of stuff I'm generally not too sympathetic to. I think it's something you don't want to start doing the police job of putting a criminal jacket on people who aren't criminal. I mean, it sounds like a collar, so let's see if I can figure out how to put this collar on. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
By God, you are a hearty race.
Well, thanks.
All right.
Very soon you're going to be able to talk to Uncle Dennis. Is there anything else you want to say?
He too.
Sorry?
He too, he's of a hearty race.
And I hope that the two of you are very hearty together, actually. But let me, anything you want to say about the subjects I've been discussing?
The Nazi salute?
Well, I haven't been talking about that much. It was more about the hearing tomorrow on the trying to reestablish rights.
That is like the illegitimate son of the Nazi salute.
Well, you got a lot of Nazi...
You have to go and drown it in the river. Anyway. Well, but you know, I mean, your persistence is humorous.
Indeed, indeed.
It's serious, it's pathetic, and it's all human.
Very true.
All right.
Hey, thank you.
I would not waste any more of my brain on this.
Fair enough. I'll let you go.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, at least it's a caller. I mean, I'm not quite the hope, perhaps the caller I'd hoped for. All right, let's hear the rest of this, and I will pack up to go so Uncle Dennis can get in. And I'll be back on Sunday, squeezing myself into this small studio and hoping that I remember to turn on the ringer, which will then enable me to hear your phone calls.
It wouldn't be so small if you lost weight, Robert.
And we have this fattest comment from Uncle Dennis. Body image.
Somebody has a concern.
They can call and talk to her.
During business hours.
During business hours, 9 to 2, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Probably the best. She's very accessible, so she certainly would be happy to talk to you about...
You have the phone number?
I might, but I don't know.
I might be taking a look.
And that pretty much does it. It's actually, there was a little more there, but, sometimes things just get cut off. Let's hear a little Dennis. We'll hear a lot of Dennis. Let's hear a little of Dave Lippmann from one of his boycott and divestment songs.